Welcome to another edition of our own InfoBytes podcast series. This week we're joined by Gavin Holmes, the production manager at our biofarm Roan. So welcome.
Cheers.
We normally start by doing a small icebreaker with our guests. So sort of a story about food, whether it be bad experience, good experience, funny story.
I think I'm a bit of a pretentious eater. Not like day to day, but like see if we'll go out for like dinner. Like,
yep.
I like to go out for something. Nice and fancy. My like wife Jill was polar opposite, like complete polar opposite.
Okay.
So her idea of like a good birthday dinner is going for a kebab, genuinely. Like that's her treat and she's like dead excited we're going to do it. Situation reversed and like I think we'd have a fallen out. She's taking me for a kebab and chips for birthday dinner. So I don't know. I think it took us like 4 years of realising that we ate completely different foods to the point where I wanted to go for a nice dinner. One of my friends, wives now just like pizza, so he could never go somewhere nice and he likes the same food as me, so we now go on like romantic meals to just the two of us because our wives won't go with us without complaining. And Jill's normally, as soon as you go for somewhere nice, when we did do it, she would make a beeline for the nearest McDonald's after it to get chicken nuggets and chips and almost cleanse our palate with barbecue sauce. So
I have to say I'm possibly a bit more like Jill. Just my last birthday, we went for a kebab out in Belgium for my birthday dinner.
Nice.
So yeah, that's what I had.
She's a cheap date.
I'm sure she makes up for it in other ways, expensive tastes in other areas. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so today we're here to talk about automation and more specifically automation within our biofarm Roan and really sort of how it powers our internal productivity. So can you start by giving an overview of the automated systems that we currently have in our production department?
Yeah, so the production process is really slurry prep, so the antibody onto to the resin through to dispensing and column build. So that's a very short version of it. Going back years ago, the slurry manufacturer used to be completely manual, as you know. So it'd be like a sintered funnel and folk could get it and shake it. What the limiting step there was how big a funnel you could get.
Yeah.
You can't buy that big a funnel. And ultimately, when you're somebody's manually handling it, it's difficult and you've got quite a high value of resin in there and you don't want to lose it.
Yep.
So we worked with a specialist supplier, SP, up in Dundee, who've been great for us. And we got Auto, which I don't actually know how it's named. I think it says Auto somewhere on it, which is the slurry making machine. So it's essentially like a very large barrel. It's got some pumps and an automated process so you can go through the slurry manufacture, and that's allowed us to do like much, much larger scales. For the production lab, the real advantage for that is you're doing less work. So you're getting the same amount of product out the door for less work. And it's also less work in the slurries, which rolls on into the number of in-process checks you need to do. And that kind of rolls on to bigger batches within dispensing, so that's the kind of real advantage for there. And that machine's been great. There's also quite a lot of solutions that you probably don't want spilling on you, and having them enclosed in a machine where it's all nice and safe, and it pumps out to waste, it's much better. So we've had that for a few years now, and it's been really good. It generally works perfectly. Some faults from time to time, but it's a solid piece of kit and really happy with it.
And that one's named affectionately as well. It's called Bertha, isn't it?
The next one? Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, found out Bertha, I thought that was people's initials who worked in the development of it, but it's not. Apparently there's a cartoon in the 80s, Bertha.
Do you not remember it?
No.
Ah, okay, so I'm showing my age then.
No, well, to be fair, I think it's like we're about the same age.
Obviously I remember it. But
it was George who was saying that Bertha the machine that could do anything.
Yeah.
Like, nah. And so I think he sent me the theme tune and it kind of rang a bell. But,
yeah.
So I thought it was genuinely the people who'd worked up and went up to the indeed to help develop it. What the kind of next part of the process is you get the bulk slurry and you just start the build of the column. So our columns have a bottom frit, put some slurry on top. The top frit is PBS, top cap and bottom cap. So what Bertha does is put in the bottom frit, which used to be a manual process, and a time-consuming manual process, then accurately dispenses the slurry. And I think when the machine was being developed, getting or having confidence that you could accurately dispense thousands upon thousands of columns within quite a tight tolerance was a concern, really. And if you weren't accurate with it, what you're really putting out, there's some products with higher film volume, which will have a slow flow rate and differences in capacity, and especially the lower ones. I think customers are probably more aware.
Yes. But
they'll get a lower capacity. So yeah, that machine was brought in, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago now.
Yeah.
And it was a difficult machine to begin with. I think it took a lot of time to build confidence. We'd never really had a machine like that internally. We didn't really have anybody who know how to work it. There wasn't a huge number of volunteers to be the person who went and worked it. So yeah, it started getting George on board, and he started working the machine on a day-to-day basis and really got to know it. And it's been wonderful.
Like, yeah.
You can measure the how effective it runs by looking at downtime and faults and a number of times it stops during a run. And generally the performance of it is on the kind of cusp of one on class or one on class.
Yeah.
So it's been a great piece of kit.
Yeah.
And that really makes a big difference in batch size, and which has a knock on with the number of QC testings that you need to do.
Yeah. And the whole production team, you know, sort of right through the various labs, they were all very instrumental in helping develop these instruments in the automation, weren't they?
Aye.
Making sure it really was replicating the manual process and transferring it onto the system.
Yeah, I think that was the kind of biggest worry, that you would see a difference in performance between a manually prepared and a Bertha prepared. Same with auto, actually.
Yeah.
There was always a concern that if you scale up massively, that the manufacturing process isn't going to be the same. Thankfully, years and years of going up and down scales for various products, I think we've got it fairly well rehearsed and know what the parameters are you need to control, and it's pretty safe now.
Yeah.
So, but it wasn't almost like that, like a chunk of work needed to do to get there. The final part of the manufacturing process is the addition of the top for it, which the placement of that needs to be, that can be critical. I'll explain that in a second.
Yep.
The addition of PBS, then the top and bottom cap going on. The top for it, for most of our products, sits directly on top of the slurry.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not directly on top of the slurry, you'll see a gap. If it's, you put it too far, you crush the resin. And if you crush the resin, then you're going to have problems with flow.
Yeah.
And that's something that everyone will notice. I think you can visually see if you crush a slurry, but when it's a manual process and you're expecting people to have that level of vigilance when you're putting the numbers work get out, I think it can be a big ask, especially during the training process of new people. So what we started to do was look how we could automate the end of that, because it's in terms of numbers within the production department, we had a team in the lab of 4 or 5. You need a couple of folks to run Bertha. Then you had 16 people to finish the columns.
Yeah.
And yeah, given the size of our company, 16 folk doing one, or there's a few different jobs within the group, but it was a big proportion of the company who'd done that kind of similar job. So yeah, that's where we looked at next.
Yeah. So obviously, as you say, the cobots was the most recent addition into the production department. What was the motivation of sort of wanting to automate that last part?
I think it started 2 summers ago, so two summers ago, when things really started to open up kind of post-COVID. That group tended to have quite a high staff turnover. It almost did.
Yeah.
There's a high number of people in the group, and high staff turnover means you're recruiting quite a lot and you're going through a constant training process, interviewing a lot, working with the recruiters, and there's a lot of stuff that doesn't really add any value into production. What we noticed, when you used to advertise that job, you would get like a rack of CVs, like an absolute rack of CVs. Post-COVID, there was a lot of people who didn't return to the workforce, and that the dispensing group, was traditionally like an older group, and I think the vast majority of folk within that group were kind of 50 plus, and it was almost a kind of good place for us to recruit from. And one of the groups that didn't return to work post COVID was that particular group. A lot of people just thought they're going to retire a little bit early, either stayed in their jobs, but when we were getting a ton of CVs, we weren't getting any at all.
Yeah.
Another kind of motivation for it was the inflation we started to see. So especially over the last couple of years, it was close on 10% for 2 years. Yeah. Wage inflation needs to match that. Yep. And I think our biofarm, where it can, wants to be a good employer. And when you've got a good team of folk, you need you can't watch their standard of living drop off because you don't keep up with inflation through pay. I think the challenge was if you can't get people, you need to pay people more, but you can't actually get them because they're not applying for the job.
Yeah.
So then you need to pay more money to attract people, and how could you solve the problem of keeping production output without passing that cost on to customers, which is really one of the kind of biggest concerns. I think the overall cost of production needs to stay as stable as it can, or we're going to lose a level of competitiveness, and nobody wants to explain to customers that, by the way, it's really hard to find folk to do the job, so it's an extra X number of pence per column. So that was the kind of what the landscape looked like. We couldn't really get folk, and we needed to give people we had a certain level of pay rise that when you've got a large group, a percentage pay rise is a large number.
Yeah.
So we started looking at what type of kind of automation solutions were there. We wanted something that could automate the process, and first started thinking about getting something like Bertha, but they could do the kind of back end of the process. Again, we first protocol was SB because they built Bertha. They've done some more dispensing machines, and essentially it'd be like another dispensing machine you'd make, and worked through a quote with them. And they looked at the project, how long it would take, and it was going to be like years, like literally years. The issue with getting a bespoke machine is that if format changes, it's going to be an expensive rework of the machine, and then your bespoke machine becomes a bit higglety-pigglety, and there's a concern that it's not going to do the job as well. So another big concern was if you've got a really large team and you're building a machine where it only needs two people, you're not going to have a large machine. So you're not going to have a large team in 2 years when people know what's coming. That was kind of, it was a difficult project to begin with. It was going to be multi-year. There was no guarantee it was going to be success. Our experience with Bertha, it was really bumpy. So I think there was quite a big risk to continuity of supply for customers, and it just didn't look as if it was going to work. Then we started looking at cobots, and to be honest, I was quite sceptical about them. The tolerance for the placement of the threat is like 2 millimetres.
Yeah, it's critical, yeah.
Yeah, like it's not much at all. And basically what a cobot is a collaborative robot, so it's not too dissimilar to the mic boom. And the reason it's collaborative, because it's safe to work with. Majority of robots will, if you're there, it'll just bang into you. If you're there with a cobot, it will slow down and stop, and their safety record was great, and so we're fine with that. Carrying the scepticism on how accurately they could do the job, because it is small margins, went to a couple of roadshow kind of events about cobots, and sort of full of sales guys and selling stuff.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, they can do this, they can do that, and some crazy numbers they're putting up about increase in productivity. And I was probably more sceptical at that point. There was somebody from Barry Skies from Smart Hub Lanarkshire who presented, and did the old Ravenscraig site.
Yep.
So there's kind of a college there, and the Scottish government had given them some money to help support manufacturing, because it used to be a big manufacturing area and it's kind of died. So he gave a presentation about cobots and was kind of inviting folk to come to the college to get a demo. So we went to the college, explained what we do, and they took some parts of us, spoke through a process. Then they had a 3D printer there, so they mocked up some plungers and some common cappers for us. Went back 2 years, 2 weeks later, and they gave us a demo of it working. And so we're like, okay, that's literally within 2 weeks, we had kind of proof of concept. And when you look at the other option of the project, do something with SP to get a bespoke machine, they were saying 2 years.
Yeah.
So that point, it seemed like a kind of viable option. So the cobot we went with was actually the UK distributor was SP. So we went back to them, worked through a project, and kind of done our sums on how many we'd need and what the productivity from would be like, and started the build. So we got one produced by SP, and the kind of thought process was get it in, see what the problems are like, and assuming it's not a total disaster, yeah, we'll get the other three. Got the first one in. There was a couple of tweaks to the design, like very, very small things, mm-hmm, but important ones the team came up with, and they were great. And I think we got the first one in February or March last year.
Yep.
Then got the remainder in August.
Yeah, yeah, it was sounds about right.
August. Mm-hmm. And they've been great. I think the accuracy they can place a top for it is perfect, like absolutely perfect, and it's so repeatable. I think if you've got a team of 18 or so, you're going to get 18 different ways of
placing
something. Yep. And so the consistency they do with is great. The other big problem was repetitive strain. You know, the numbers of columns we sell per year, and the top cap placement is quite hard. Mm-hmm. And those people, quite a few people off with kind of sore shoulders. Health and safety is obviously like super important, and that type of repetitive strain injury is probably worse than falling down hurting yourself, because it's something that's built up over years, and like if you're not careful, you can live with it.
Yep.
And the cobots themselves took out so much manual handling. Like people just place the caps on, then the cobot does the physically demanding parts. So I think the team did kind of first look at them and thought it'd be quite good. And I think since they've come in, people have been really enthused by them, and it's been
it's fantastic to go down and see all of it in operation together and actually everybody interacting with it, and everybody's really taking it on board and really excited about them. It's wonderful to go down and see in there.
Yeah, it's and that was almost the part of the risk, that you do all the design, you think this is great, then you speak to people about it and they're like,
and nobody likes change, it's human nature, isn't it? But I think everybody's really taken it on board and worked with it, and it's been good. And as you say, I think the right collaborations have been vital throughout this. And, you've mentioned a few companies there, and I think they've been instrumental in really turning around that production department, which has been good.
Yeah. Smart Hub Lanarkshire were fantastic, and gave that feedback to them, just how good they were. Because you kind of go and you speak to somebody about it and you think, oh, cool, we'll go back in a couple of weeks and see how things are.
Yep.
And there's no fee for it. It's just a kind of government-funded scheme and some really well-placed in terms of experiences. People within manufacturing know exactly what you're looking for. And go in 2 weeks later and they finished some columns for us, we were like, right, they were brilliant. Couldn't speak highly enough of them.
Yeah, good. So obviously you mentioned the motivation for us to invest in automation. What benefits do you think this has brought for our customers?
Consistency of product is a big one.
Yeah.
Like I said, the placement of Fritz, you know how we used to do it, and it was a good process, and I don't think, certainly didn't hear any negative feedback from customers, but people do things slightly different ways. Like as soon as there's kind of manual intervention, you know, it's like running tests.
Yep.
Some people will get great recoveries with some products, some people won't. And it's just natural variation from individuals. And to remove that, I think, is is important. I think availability of stock is another one. What we've seen, especially with the high turnover of people, is it takes, or it did take quite a long time to train somebody, and some people would come in because it was quite a physically demanding job, and it's just not for them, which is very understandable. It's a tough job, or it was an even more difficult job, and you know, you can wait 2 months for somebody to start, then they come in and they're there for a month getting trained and they leave, and it's quite a long lag. So our ability to restock, I think, was we're okay at it, but I don't think it was as good as it could have been. So with Cobots, I think somebody can come in and get trained pretty quick. It's, you've seen them as a panel with like four or five buttons on it. There's background software, but it's you can work it with four buttons, and it's quite quick to pick up. And cost of production is controlled. It really is controlled. You mentioned productivity. Productivity within the group has just about doubled, very, very close to doubling. Doubling productivity halves team size, which is just about what's happened, which halves wage bill. So obviously you've got the capital expense of the equipment and the running costs, and it's not, you don't just save all the wage money, there is a spend.
Yeah.
But it gives us a lot greater control in the cost of production, and especially with all the inflationary pressures of the last few years, I think we tried to keep control of the cost of our products as much as we can, and we've seen changes in the market where that's becoming more important to customers, and as it is to us. And to be able to control what we can control, which are our internal costs. There's unfortunately things out with our control, like raw material supply, that you can't do much about, but being able to exert the control on how productive we are, I think, does have a knock-on to customers.
Yeah, certainly being somebody that's in a customer-facing role, it's great sort of representing our biofarm loan and knowing with confidence you've got stock there and good products at good quality. Aye. You know, they've produced well, you know.
Yeah.
It makes the job easier when you're out there with customers, I think.
Yeah, it makes it easier to make stuff as well, which is almost a bonus.
So obviously going forward, we're already planning a lot of new projects and automated solutions sort of within the company. So it will be interesting to see what the next couple of years brings. I think you and I are working on a few different things. And it will be interesting to see more changes coming forward throughout the company, and not just in production, hopefully, as well.
Yeah, I think there's, we're already speaking to SP about options, kind of add-ons to the Cobots, and what we can do next. And just waiting to hear back from them just how viable some of them are. But I think as technology progresses and we need to match it, and you go to some kind of roadshow type events and seeing some of the technology that's coming through, especially for kind of automation. It's pretty cool, and you kind of need to keep up to date with it. It might not always be for us, and
I doubt
it is, but when you look at it, you think there's got to be a way can...
No, it's exciting. There's lots of opportunity anyway.
Aye, absolutely.
So, well, thank you, Gavin. That, I think, is us for today and wraps up another episode of the Roan InfoBite series.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Cheers.